Hey friends, welcome to the podcast companion to A Homemaker's Manifesto. My name is Issa, and if you are new here, this is kind of a bonus podcast episode for all of my subscribers. I have been putting out podcast companions to a lot of my Substack posts lately. I've been having a lot of fun with it. I've actually got a lot of great guests lined up who are going to come and talk to us. So definitely expanding the podcast side of A Homemaker's Manifesto more. And I'm really excited about that. So I thought I would put this episode out. I was supposed to do it way earlier in the week, and a bunch of different stuff kept happening, including new subjects cropping up that I wanted to talk about on the podcast. So today, it's just going to be kind of a smorgasbord. I'm going to tell you a little bit about me and my background if you are new to who I am and what I'm doing. And we're going to discuss a little bit about what it means to be a keeper at home if you are also working or the governor of an entire state, as in the case of Sarah Sanders. We're going to talk about that a little bit later, as well as just touch back on the topic of one of my most recent podcasts, which was housework, managing housework when you are the full-time homemaker and your husband's working full-time, and perhaps this is a point of stress where you are wanting him to help more, or you're navigating how much you should be expected to do and how much he should be expected to do, or how much you should be expecting him to do at home. So anyway, back up. Who am I? My name is Issa. As I said, I am a freelance writer. I've been writing in the conservative media space for about 6 years. I've worked with people like Elizabeth Johnston. I've worked for her for 6 years. She used to be Activist Mommy. We do Elizabeth Johnston Ministries now. I've been her senior writer for, about 6 years. I currently write and a contributor for the Western Journal. I have also written for Chad Prather and the Standing for Freedom Center at Liberty University, as well as Sheriff David Clark for a short time. So I've been in the space for a little while, worked with some people with much bigger influence than me. It's kind of an interesting time to be in conservative media in the post-Trump era, because most of the writing that I did was during the Trump era, which really defined a lot of my views about politics and morality and philosophy and how much our faith should inform what we expect our government to do in a republic. So those topics are pretty interesting to me. I've always been kind of a politico. I used to be a far left politico. Now I am a very conservative, pretty unabashed Christian nationalist, although that term has been so demonized and so fallaciously tied to white supremacy or white nationalism. I even, cringe almost a little bit saying it and like, oh no, people listening aren't going to want to listen to me anymore. I would love to explain more about why I call myself a Christian nationalist if that is something that wildly offends you. I have posted about that on Instagram in the past. But the truth is that I believe very strongly that our faith, if we are convicted, born-again Christians, our faith should inform every aspect of our lifestyle. Your faith is not something that you check on the box, oh, this is just one aspect of me. I have blue eyes and I'm from San Francisco and I am a Christian. No, I am a Christian and that is the most important thing about me. And everything in my life kind of flows from that. And if it is not being informed by my faith, it's something that I just believe I need to reassess. None of this is to say that I am by any means a perfect Christian at all. I'm still growing. I can be very immature. I can be very rude and sarcastic, particularly when it comes to naysayers on the internet, like the rest of us. But this is simply what I believe that a Christian should view as their relationship to their faith, that it ought to be informing every aspect of their lifestyle, whether that is how their homes are run, how they relate to their spouse and their children, or how they relate to governing authorities where they live. So all of that is to say, if you are listening and you are not American, a lot of what I talk about as far as how I believe Christians should be engaging in the culture is specific to living in the Republic of the United States of America, where the people hold the power that's what a republic is and ought to be. But that is not to say that I don't speak a lot to, this is a homemaker's manifesto. So the thing that really drives me the most is being a modern day woman who, again, whose entire life is informed by her faith and her subjection to Christ. I should also mention, I know that I might have readers and listeners who are also not Christian, so I apologize because I certainly don't apologize for being a Christian, but I just want to say I hear you, I see you, I appreciate so much that you're here. I have been kind of surprised and honestly quite honored that people who are Jewish and Muslim and simply not Christian have found my ideas resonate with them. I think that's something worth paying attention to, that we can have common ground right now in a really divided time over the things that matter the most, like family and children and the welfare and dignity of women. And that's really what I'm here for. That's really what I'm all about. Again, yes, everything that I do is informed by my faith. So I'm going to talk like I am a devout conservative Christian, because I am. And I wouldn't be one if I was ashamed of that, or if I wanted to censor that or downplay that. And there have been many times in my life where my faith did take kind of a backseat. So I'm always trying to avoid that. But yeah, I just wanted to give a shout out to my non-Christian listeners out there. If there are any, I appreciate you, and you are absolutely welcome here. I would love to dialogue with you and speak with you. But yeah, just fair warning, there's a whole lot of Jesus going on over here. At any rate, so that was my attempt to introduce myself, and I kind of talked more about my ideas about things, which is kind of my style. I'm not super interested in talking about myself, at least as far as personal details about my life, but I do get a lot of questions because of my background. So I was raised progressive feminist in San Francisco. I had a very atheist / agnostic / spiritual but not religious / pagan kind of upbringing. I was exposed to a lot of religions and faiths and traditions and mythology. I went to a Waldorf school, a Rudolf Steiner school, which focuses a lot on various traditions and religions around the world. I am grateful that I had that background. It was obviously not a Christian upbringing by any stretch of the imagination. I did not hear the gospel until I was 23. I had moved to Maui. I wanted to grow my own food. That was my entire motivation to move from San Francisco. I was living by myself for the first time in an apartment in San Francisco, and I kind of fell in love with homemaking. I had no idea about anything having to do with cooking or cleaning. You know, I was kind of a latchkey kid growing up. My parents both worked full time. They kept a very lovely home for me. They were divorced, so two different homes. You know, it was always clean, and my mom's kind of a health nut, and my dad is kind of a gourmand, so I had a lot of exposure to great food growing up, and obviously in San Francisco, there's tons of great food there. I've never been anywhere where the food rivaled the food that's available in San Francisco, but I just was not in a household most of the time. And, you know, I have so much sympathy for my mom looking back. She was just tired at the end of the day, and she made healthy, nutritious meals for me, absolutely. And she kept our house relatively clean. But what she didn't have, and she was very vocal with me about this, she did not have time to teach me how to do these kind of basic life things. And, you know, my mom today, she's a progressive Democrat. We're very close, and I love her very much. So that's not like a point of tension or anything like that. But the fact that she completely supports what I'm doing and what we're doing, because I do believe, again, that these are universal values. The value of building homes, of the nuclear family, of traditional marriage, these are the bedrock of great civilizations, and not just within Christendom. Again, I really feel so passionately right now that here I go again talking about what I believe and not me, but that's okay. Hopefully you're more interested in these big ideas than little old me. I really believe that we can change the culture by embracing these traditional values in a more broadly universal way. You know, again, I'm never going to be ashamed of tying my faith to what I'm doing, but I also see a lot of value and validity in people who are, again, non-Christian or, you know, maybe Hindu, Sikh, Muslim, Jewish, what have you, who are recognizing what has happened to society since the family unit was broken apart, and our view of women and our view of marriage and how men and women ought to relate to one another has been so drastically altered. So hopefully you got enough biographical information about me, because I definitely have to move into our next topic on that note. Because that was the subject of my Prayerful Digest last week. By the way, my Prayerful Digest is a weekly current events roundup for all my premium subscribers over on Substack. Okay, sorry, I guess I have to do a really quick aside about that. Substack, if you are not aware, is a publisher, a platform for independent writers like me to be supported completely by their readers. So you don't need to rely on third-party advertisers, big tech middlemen, people who are going to censor you or suppress you. Instead of selling your data to advertisers and giving you free content that, you know, tracks you and feeds data into people's caches of data, whatever you call that, who are just trying to make money off of you. You can choose if you can just subscribe to my free content. You can also upgrade and choose a paid subscription. Then you get a lot of exclusive content from me, including a book club. We have a weekly book club that has been so awesome. It's an open-ended book club, so you can read whatever book you want. You can read as many books as you want this year. I do provide an ebook that has a lot of great recommendations, all my top recommended books in a number of different categories. And then we have a discussion in the chat. There's a Substack app that has a subscriber chat. We have a discussion in that chat every week. You can kind of chime in whenever you want to. It's designed specifically for busy mamas and homemakers, and it is designed specifically to orient our thoughts towards God and growing in wisdom. And I love literature. I love good books. So I have grown so much in my faith through books, obviously the Word of God, as well as a lot of great literature that reflects His goodness, His truth, goodness, and beauty. So that is what Substack is. A Homemaker's Manifesto is published on Substack. Probably most of you know this because you're probably listening on Substack. But yeah, the really cool thing is I can publish my podcast there. I can have kind of my group, of inner circle premium subscribers over there. We can do our book club. I'm planning on launching kind of homemaking mentorship group very soon. It'll probably be very casual and low key as well. And then also there is my current events roundup, because again, my background is in news and current events and politics, but I have been so burnt out on the just shallow and petty rhetoric of mainstream politics and the way it's covered in the media and just the way social media influences what gets people angry and gets people commenting. I'm so over it. So I've been trying to just bring you guys, you know, those busy mamas and homemakers out there, bring them a perspective on current events that is through a biblical lens that points us to Christ, because it is so easy to get either feel angry or cynical or just straight up depressed and want to stick your head in the sand with everything going on, because we are living in really unstable times. That is just a fact. You know, I don't want to say that to make anybody scared. It is so hard to try to keep people informed without scaring them or getting them depressed. And I get it. I want to stick my head in the sand too a lot of the time. But the truth is that all of this is part of God's plan, and we were put into this century for a reason. He wanted us here. He wanted us raising our children. I know how depressing it is raising children and thinking, not even knowing what the world is going to look like when they grow up, but He wanted us to be raising those children and to be pointing them towards Him. So I do my best to point you all towards Him as we digest current events together. So that's what the Prayerful Digest is for, and it's every week. And yeah, so last week my subject was that feminism has never really been about quote-unquote equal rights. And those quotes are important because the very concept of quote-unquote equal rights is itself rather vague. I feel like a lot of people don't even notice this. Like, we take this concept of equal rights for granted. And obviously, I know, you know, if there were any of those very lovely people who like to correct all of my definitions of everything in the comment sections of my post, if I ever comment about feminism on Instagram, there'd be people out there saying, well, of course, equal rights just means, and this is the trope that you hear all the time, equal rights just means the right to own property, the right to vote, and the right to serve in public office and have career and educational opportunities the same as men. That is what a lot of people believe feminism is just those things. And that's what I kind of discussed in that newsletter. But the truth is that when women like Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she prefers to be called Sarah Sanders, I have heard, so I will call her that because she's a married woman, so she's no longer using her father's name. Her father, of course, is the former governor of Arkansas, though, so she's been known in the media, Sarah Huckabee Sanders. So she was just sworn in as governor of Arkansas last week, and she is the first female governor of Arkansas. She and her father are the first father-daughter pair to ever both serve as governor in the United States. She is the youngest governor currently serving in the United States. She's only 40 years old. She was also only the third woman ever to serve as White House press secretary. She was President Donald Trump's, I believe, his third press secretary. And she was the first mother to serve in that position. So she, what I wrote about last week was the fact that, so she served in the Trump administration. She's a Trumper. She's a very conservative, kind of run-of-the-mill conservative. There's a lot of reasons why a conservative might criticize her. I kind of feel, don't really feel one way or the other about her. I liked her as press secretary just because I thought she brought a lot of just like grace and calm, cool collectedness to the like chaotic and crazy, you know, constantly. She was constantly being baited by the press because it was when they were the most rabidly hateful against Trump. And I just thought she handled it really graciously. And she is a, you know, a professing Christian woman of God. And she speaks like she is. And she is, of course, she is pro-life. And the first thing she did when she was sworn into office was ban critical race theory in school. So she is like a progressive feminist, the anti-progressive feminist. And that is why, despite breaking these glass ceilings of what we are told is, you know, of embodying what we are told, is this is all feminism is. All feminism is that women like Sarah Sanders should be able to serve in office, right? Well, when women like Sarah Sanders are sworn into office, we see that, no, that is not what feminism is about. It is not what feminism has it is not the impact that feminism has had on their culture, because contemporary feminists, for the most part, consider a woman who is pro-life, who is anti-abortion, to not be a feminist, because women's rights is how the majority of feminists today, and I'm talking about the influential figures in culture who are going to be teaching women's studies, feminist studies in universities, and that's what matters, because these are the people actually influencing the ideas of people who consider themselves to be feminists. I could easily call myself a feminist. I don't feel kind of one way or the other about voting rights, to be honest. I know that probably to a lot of people sounds like a really crazy position to take. I'm very grateful to be able to vote. I am grateful. I have no problem with women serving in public office. I don't. I'm, you know, again, I believe in biblical patriarchy. I'm very, very conservative. I would have been perfectly happy in the Victorian era, although I know it had its problems. I don't think there is anything wrong at all. In fact, I strongly believe that it is good to have designated factions of society for men and women, women's work and men's work. I think that is a good and positive thing that reflects nature and biblical values. That said, I don't think that is at the same time inconsistent with, sure, maybe there are some women who genuinely are going to be strong enough to compete against men or to compete, to get into the military, for example. I'm generally pretty much opposed to women in military and police, but there are cases where some women genuinely are going to be tough enough to do that. They should be as tough as a man, though, because that's going to be, you're going to get like one in a billion women who can, yeah, there are sometimes women who are going to be able to compete in a man's world, as we'd say. And fine, I think if they can do it, they can do it. You know, we don't need to make stringent rules about restricting women from everything that a man would traditionally do, you know. And the thing that makes me different, though, from how feminists view this is that I don't think that's because of progress. This would be a whole other rabbit trail to go down, but progress. So many I hear conservative Christians use the language of progress too. There is a prevailing worldview, sort of, or maybe it'd be fairer to say a prevailing presumption, that humanity is evolving, is moving forward. We're getting better by the day. And it's easy in modernity. We have adapted this presumption very comfortably because we have things like antibiotics. We have things like women voting. And I apologize for the background noise. I have included a disclaimer in the past that this podcast is going to include sounds of daily life. I do not have a soundproof room in my house. My office is a loft, so my kids are feeding. They're doing their afternoon chores right now, so I apologize for that. I hope it's not too distracting. You may or may not also hear a rooster crow. You may have already. I don't know. At any rate, yeah, so we have all kinds of super advanced technology and huge radical social changes. And so we point to that and we say progress. And again, I hear very conservative Christians use the language of, oh, well, you know, it's 2023, so of course women can serve in office. I don't think that women can serve in office because it's 2023. I think women can serve in office because there are sometimes going to be women who can be strong female leaders. Look at, you know, Deborah, Queen Elizabeth, Queen Victoria. The thing is that none of these women are notable as leaders because they were like, I'm a woman, I can do what a man can do. They stepped up and did what was required of them, and they were still very much women. I think Queen Victoria is the greatest example of this. She is known for her devotion and submission to her husband. She's criticized by moderns for it because she was so sort of under his thumb, Prince Albert. They had a really lovely marriage. If you read about it, they were very devoted to each other, and it's kind of a really interesting. I really admire her because I think she navigated submitting to your husband while you are the queen of a country, of an entire country at the time, the most powerful empire in the world. And she was very feminine, and she is known for being very feminine and motherly and womanly, and I think she is a great figure for that reason. And it was during her time, the influence of herself and Prince Albert, who were very conservative, that, you know, that's why we associate the Victorians with being very kind of prudish and old-fashioned. And that is also the culture that largely dissipated and died after the two world wars, when gender relations, I hate that word gender. It has become such a norm. It is made up. It is a made up concept. There's sex, that's it, male and female. And then there are very rare cases when people have mutations in their DNA, and so they are intersex. Anyway, sex relations, or however you want to put it, sex relations sounds a little too spicy. It's not what I'm talking about, obviously. Roles for men and women, relations between men and women, views of marriage and a woman's duty to her family. So I think Sarah Sanders is a good example of how a woman, can, you know, take advantage of this equal rights we're told that feminism is really only about, and still be conservative. She can still hold conservative values, because Sarah Sanders is the governor of Arkansas because of her values. And yeah, let's be real, because her father is the former governor, because she worked in the Trump administration, she was definitely a shoo-in. But she, again, she is there to serve according to what she believes in, we can assume, and not because she's a woman. And today's feminists want hello, Vice President Kamala Harris is vice president because she is a woman of color. That those were her qualifications. And it is a shame, a disgrace to women everywhere, because the fact that her qualifications, and as well as women of color, the fact that her qualifications were these superficial features – had proven that she wasn't qualified in any other way, which is, I think, a disgrace. You know, it goes to show, like, a woman should be, if a woman is, again, if a woman is going to enter into a sphere where men normally are, I think she should be, she should be perfectly welcome if she can keep up, you know, and great female leaders should be considered great female leaders because they are great. And yes, it's noteworthy when women can be great leaders, because that is typically something that men have done. And I don't believe it is simply because of the patriarchy, because there's some great conspiracy to suppress women. That is a, excuse me, that is a completely modern concept. It's rooted in very, very recent ideas that kind of psychologized human society and explained everything. As this is why you hear these tropes like the term homophobic. It's not that you have a religious conviction that homosexuality is immoral. It's that you're secretly afraid of gay people and you're afraid to get in touch with your deeper sexual desires. I mean, there is always, and I used to be a leftist, so believe me, this is what leftists think. That people who oppose homosexuality are just secretly gay. That was something I heard and believed, I accepted without even really thinking about. And it's the same for, I got asked the other day, somebody asked me, why do you hate women? And I was like, I am a woman. This was obviously on Instagram. And they were like, oh, I thought you were a man because of this drivel. Like, there's this presumption that men don't want women to be quote unquote empowered because they're threatened by strong women. And I really have not seen that to be the case. Misogyny is a real thing. Toxic masculinity is a real thing. Or what the left defines as toxic masculinity is a real immoral problem. And that's men seeing women as sex objects, taking advantage of them, treating them like garbage. You know, these are real things. And you know what it's called? Sin. It's sin. And men generally have sin tendencies that might differ from women, because women sin as well. And so that's just one example of how our prevailing modern presumptions just cloud the way people view everything, so that it's not, it is a very new way of viewing the world, but people take it for granted. They assume it because it is so pervasive in the culture today. That's something I write and talk about a lot, so I won't go any further on that topic. What I did want to say about Sarah Sanders, though, because I got a question about this on Instagram when I posted about it, and it was something that I had kind of wanted to touch on a little bit in the podcast companion anyway, which is, how can she be a keeper at home? You know, she's a Christian woman, so how is being the governor of a state consistent with being a keeper at home when she has school-age children? Because her children are young, you know, she's only a few years older than I am, and I think her kids are around my age. My kids are 9 and 10. And this is a good question, and it's something that, this is a topic that I have a lot to say about. So to start with, when we say women are supposed to be keepers at home, that is based on the Bible verse in Titus 2, which calls on older women. This is all important. So it calls on older women to teach the younger women. So Titus 2 doesn't actually directly say women should be keepers at home. Then the phrase keepers at home does not actually necessarily mean only at home. So let me read this. The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach the young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. Now, I am just as interested in the whole package there, as far as what older women should be teaching younger women to do. The operative part of this passage is that, I think I'm pointing this out because I feel like we miss it so much in Christian culture today, even very traditional and conservative cultures who are really into women being at home, which obviously I am, I'm all about it, is that this is a model for how to raise up women to orient their hearts towards their families, to, again, extend their faith into every facet of their life. And it's describing raising them up with all these character attributes, but we focus so much on keeper at home. Now, the Strongs for this, I'm not going to try to pronounce the Greek. I don't really know a whole lot about Greek, but keeper at home means actually a guard or a stayer at home that is domestically inclined, a good housekeeper, a keeper at home. Theirs is that caring for the house, working at home, the watch or keeper of the house, keeping at home and taking care of household affairs, a domestic. So I'm really adamant. I have been a freelancer for 6 years. I have known women who have worked outside of the home and are devout, godly Christian women. I'm very adamant that you can be a good housekeeper if you are working, if you are earning an income. It's only in recent times that we've pitted kind of having a job that pays you against being a full-time homemaker, as though these are mutually exclusive. The Proverbs 31 woman who did things that earned money obviously proves that there is not, it is completely consistent with Titus 2, the Titus 2 model of what younger women should be taught about being a godly Christian woman as far as it extends to our family and how we relate to them. It's obviously all very consistent. That said, in that definition that we just got, there is a huge emphasis on being at home. So again, I do not believe this is a prescription for Christian women everywhere who are married and have kids to only be at home and never leave the house. I don't think, however, that being the governor of a state is incredibly consistent with being a keeper at home. Now, that said, I have literally zero interest in saying what I think Sarah Sanders should or shouldn't do. That's between her and her husband and her children and her God. I think it is a matter, I don't know if I'd say a matter of Christian liberty, but it's a matter of humility, at least attempted humility on my part, that I have enough failings. I think it's kind of petty to just be like, well, you know, she's not going to be a good mom now, or she's not going to be a good wife now. I think a woman who fears the Lord, which is the principal attribute of the Proverbs 31 woman, a woman who fears the Lord and loves God and loves her husband and loves her children can, in theory, could make, you know, she's not going to lose her salvation. She's probably not going to leave her kids at a disadvantage. She was the daughter, well, she was probably like in high school when her dad was governor, probably even older than that. She was probably like in college, but, you know, she's familiar with what she's doing. It's very likely that it is going to harm her family, and I think that's a shame. And this is not the kind of career that I personally think is wise for the mother of school-age children to pursue. And I think it's important that we just be comfortable saying that. Again, there's a difference between me trying to say that Sarah Sanders is wrong, is not obeying the Bible. I'm just going to trust that she's probably thought about it at the very least. Yeah, maybe she's making decisions that just aren't that great. I don't know. That's her business. She's not a member of my church. I don't know her personally. I trust God to work in her heart and minister to her husband and her children and find a way to sort that out. In general, though, I would not recommend, if you're asking me, Isa, should I run for governor of my state? My kids are still young. No, I would not recommend that. So that's what I wanted to say about that. And finally, I did want to loop back to, hopefully I'm not beating a dead horse now, but as relates to what we're talking about with biblical womanhood and traditional womanhood and what we shouldn't be afraid to say, I was really blown away by the reaction to a post that I had on Substack. I recorded a podcast companion about it too. And then, of course, I posted on Instagram, you know, just to be like, hey, come read my thing. And it blew up. And that was the question of, should the husband of a full-time homemaker be expected to help with housework? So it was very interesting how many people found it very offensive that I very delicately put, in general, I believe that men should be able to come home and relax. I didn't say men should be able to come home to a perfectly cleaned home. I didn't say men should never help their wives with housework. That's women's work. I didn't say you should bust your rear end all day long, be his slave. You know, I didn't say anything that was nuance free, just sort of like across the board, everybody should do this at all. You know, I acknowledge that there are going to be all kinds of seasons of life and every family is going to do what works for them, and that's completely fine. And a lot of comments said that, you know, everybody is just going to do what works for them and that's fine. But a lot of people said, no, he should help with housework. And the reason for this that a lot of people gave was that a housewife works a 16-hour day and a man with a full-time job works an 8-hour day. And so he gets home and he's done with work and I'm not. And I found that really interesting because it was this attitude that I wanted to mostly address. The reason that this is an issue worth addressing is because a lot of women complain that their husbands get home and won't help them with housework. Yet, if you consider it from the man's perspective, and I have been the full-time breadwinner for my family. I was at home, and I still did all the cooking just because my husband and I both prefer it that way, that I do the cooking. He helped with a lot of housework. He homeschooled our kids. He did so much of the parenting, and I didn't even really realize just like how much until he went back to work this summer full time for the first time in 3 years. And I was like, whoa, I had not been the full time parent. I had been home with my kids the entire time, but my husband and I were sharing a lot of those responsibilities and he was taking them off places and homeschooling them a lot of the time. And so all of that was to say, I have seen, I have been on kind of both sides where I've been the one who finishes with work for the day and doesn't want to get handed a bunch of other things to do. And I vocalized that to my husband and he accommodated me pretty quickly. But more importantly, it really humbled me because I had been the wife that when he was working full time and when we had two toddlers and he would come home and I would complain that I was the one doing all the housework. And I just realized how completely obnoxious that was, especially because I am a freelance writer. I sit in my sweatpants at a desk. He has been a physical laborer for all the work he's ever done has been physical outdoors. He works 10-hour days now. And then he comes home and half the time he'll load wood for us, you know, if we're running low on firewood and he needs to bring some up from the bottom of our property where he's cut it up. He changed my oil the other day after working 10 hours outdoors, physical labor. And so it is wild to me that women compare being at home full time as though every waking minute is the same as being on the job, because it's simply not. And that's true for guys who aren't blue collar worker, you know, who aren't physical laborers like my husband. But the fact that I picked up on a lot of like classism there, you know, I've always been very proud to be a working class wife. And part of that is I think that a lot of people just simply, the only conversation people have about sex roles, about roles for men and women, is within the context of white-collar professions. They assume that husband is a white-collar worker. They assume that wife is either going to be a homemaker or a white-collar professional. And that is so offensive to working-class women and men. So many women who wish they could be home with their kids and they're working at fast food places or maybe even daycare centers taking care of other people's kids or factory jobs or even labor, you know, janitorial work, whatever. There are so many women out there who are doing the least glamorous jobs. And those are the real working women for the most part. You know, it is white collar professional women who tend to choose jobs that more easily accommodate having a family, like being a psychologist or a teacher or a pediatrician, family practice doctor, jobs where you work less hours and yes, get paid less. This is where the wage gap myth comes from. Women overall, and feminists were upset about this in the 90s, because these empowered, educated women who were the product of second wave feminism, who had been told that they didn't need to be homemakers anymore, that they could have whatever career they wanted, they could do whatever they wanted with their lives, they were still choosing homemaking. Even the professional women who had degrees, who had jobs, who had private practices, fancy white collar jobs, were still choosing homemaking. So that is kind of why I would like to try to give a little bit of the benefit of the doubt to Sarah Sanders, that she's probably thought about how to fit her family life into being governor. Well, again, I imagine it is going to be a huge challenge, and I would not recommend women pursue such an involved career as being a governor, or even a career that's half as involved as being a governor. I wouldn't recommend, because again, the orientation of being a keeper at home is your home, largely being at home, making it possible so that you can be at home a lot of the time. Or what I've learned in my job, even though I am working at home, being able to drop everything and physically be at home when somebody needs something is really important. You know, I have to be able to, I adjust my schedule constantly because of just parenting. You know, my kid, you know, we have parenting things that come up, and I have to stop, and I have to correct, and I have to talk, and I have to, you know, work with my kids. And so it really accommodates me to be a freelancer, where I have clients who are always really flexible and work with me as I'm constantly changing when I'm going to turn something in and everything like that. So anyway, as far as expecting your husband, who is working full time, to come home and help you with the housework, if that is a point of tension in your, if this is causing tension in your marriage, which it often does, it might be because you are expecting your husband to do something that you agreed to be your sole responsibility. Expecting is really the key word here. A lot of ladies who, you know, kind of like me, in the comments section, we're saying, well, yeah, but a decent guy is going to stand up and he'll probably pitch in if you just leave him alone. And that is so true. It's so true for my husband. I have often just dumped all my stress and frustration about everything I have to do to him, and he's like, well, why don't you do this? Or he'll surprise me and just do something super practical to help me out. And it's often not what I had wanted him to do. Like, I want him to just suddenly start cooking, even though he never cooks and probably doesn't know where half the stuff in our kitchen is. It's really unreasonable of me to expect him to just like make dinner. I make most of our food from scratch. Like, he would have to just like gain a ton of cooking skills all at once to be able to cook his dinner. Side note, one of my goals this year, though, I'm going to talk about the things you can, just practical things you can do to make it easier on both of you if you are genuinely overwhelmed. But one of the things I'm going to try to do this year is just have more food on hand that he could easily just heat up for us in case I'm sick or working or whatever it is, just to make it easy. So again, so he doesn't have to just like know how, I mean, he knows how to cook, like basic things, but again, I make everything from scratch, so it's like, it's harder to just like tell somebody to do what I was going to do, and then it would be to just have like a frozen pizza or some pasta that would be really easy to cook. So there's an example of something you can do if you are needing more help. But he often comes up with really practical, sensible ways to lighten my load that don't necessarily burden him more unnecessarily, or that help, that it's him helping out in a way that makes sense and is comfortable for him. And I agree. I think a lot of men are going to do this if you just give them a chance. I think the problem is that we, and I was noticing this just yesterday, waiting for him to come home, when we're feeling stressed and overwhelmed, it's good that we rely on our husbands, and that's a good thing, but we see him coming home as like the relief. And so it's easy to be like, oh, thank goodness another adult is home. You can do the laundry. You can help me clean. I've been working all day and you just want to sit on your phone. And here we arrive at the problem. And what I really had concluded in the post is that it's the wife's attitude that matters the most. If you have an attitude of service for your family and your husband, if you, and I'm going to say like me, and not to be, I'm not a remotely perfect housekeeper at all. Like, I'm literally looking at dust in my house right now. We have a super dusty house because we burn firewood, but I'm not a perfect housekeeper at all. But I have always assumed, I have always expected that I am the one who is doing the bulk of the housework and the homemaking, and we've arranged our life so that I can do that. You know, I don't work a whole lot. He went back to work full time to make it easier for me, because just with between homesteading and homeschooling and working at home, it was getting to be too much. And so that's been a huge relief for me, and I get a lot more flexibility in my writing, because I don't think I ever really would give this up. I love doing what I'm doing, but anyway, not to ramble on about me. If you do expect that you are the one who's going to do this, you're going to approach your husband when you need help in a completely different attitude. If you are feeling bitter and resentful that he's working 8-hour days while you're working 16-hour days, without putting that into perspective that 8 hours at an office or a job site is going to be more demanding, more nonstop than working at home where you can sit down, scroll on Instagram, and you probably do that too much, more than you should anyway. There is nothing wrong with every couple, every mature couple has a bunch of shared responsibilities. But this attitude that absolutely not, he should be helping, he gets home and we share all the housework. I think it is very unfair to a man to expect him to go along with that. Lots of men will, and that's fine. Lots of men believe that they should help their wife with housework as soon as they get home because, you know, they're an adult too and they live there at home too. Whatever, you know, they're probably feminist men, but, you know, I'm not like, I'm not trying to make a rule for anybody as far as like men and women and who should do what. But a lot of families have a man who works full time to support his wife so she can be at home full time. And I know that with homeschooling, I know that with children, I know that with homesteading, the work piles up. And if you are homeschooling and homesteading, chances are you have a husband who is focused on supporting his wife and children. Most men are a lot more than they get credit for, because they just don't vocalize it as much as we do, or they aren't stepping up and helping in the way that their wife thinks that they should. But if you take a step back and look at things objectively, you will see that your husband is actually probably doing a lot, and he certainly thinks he is. I know there are going to be the guys out there who are genuinely lazy and need to repent of that, but in that case, you know, what is going to get you further? Anger and bitterness, or compassion and patience and prayer and doing what you can? You are in control of your life. Every single person is in control of their actions and their actions alone, and their heart orientation towards God alone. And we are told to be patient when people are crappy to us. So that includes lazy husbands who put their feet up when they get home and, you know, they have a super easy job. They could totally help out with the housework. You have 3 children under 3 and you're drowning. You need help. You need help. And if your husband isn't giving it to you, there are a lot of places you should be reaching out to: family, church, and not to complain about your husband, not to bash your husband. Because again, what's going to be effective? Yes, he's probably being lazy and a jerk. What is going to be really effective in changing his heart? 1 Peter 3 tells us the best chance a wife has of actually influencing her husband in that way is when he sees her chaste behavior accompanied by fear of the Lord. And there is a great book if you are in this position where you have a husband who is genuinely neglecting or mistreating you. And I use the word genuinely very strongly, because we women are very good at considering ourselves to be oppressed when we are not necessarily oppressed and just living with another flawed, fallen human being. But the book by Gary Thomas, Loving Him Well, is a great book for how to not change but influence your husband. And guess where it starts? It starts with your own relationship with God, your own contentment and satisfaction in your own soul, dumping all of our problems at our husband's feet, which tends to kind of be what's going on when wives are wanting their husbands to help out more around the house. That is something that we are big girls. We can hike up our big girl pants. and we can see what we can do to lighten our own load. Because I think a lot of women are just working harder and not smarter. And we can flip that around and find a lot of practical ways to make that happen. So what are they? As I said, one thing that I can do, I make a lot of food from scratch. So I have the capacity to make more food from scratch that I can have on hand. So that if, again, my husband does enough, I'm not complaining. I do not expect my husband to clean when he gets home. He does so much around our homestead, and he is a generally clean guy. So I have never, you know, I have definitely been sick and been like, gosh, I wish he knew how to make pizza dough right now, because it'd be easier if he, you know, I don't feel like explaining it. But anyway, so one thing that I want to do just to make my load easier is have more foods on hand that are quicker to prepare. I have like a rotation of meals that I know my family likes. But I've been noticing lately, I do a lot of stuff that requires a lot of prep, and I want to get back into like bulk cooking and having more food. I try to have ingredients on hand all the time for quick and easy meals, but I want to do things like have pizza dough in the, I par bake pizza crusts and keep them in the freezer to stick in the oven. You know, you can make your own frozen pizzas. It's really easy and cheap. Easy things like that to make meal prep faster. Another thing that you can do is just sit down and write down every single thing that you have to do every day and see what can be eliminated. Cut the fat in every area of your life. Cut the fat. My favorite principle for homemaking time management is a place for everything and everything in its place. This is really, really important to have for cleanliness. If you have things in your home that don't have a home of their own, that is clutter, and it needs a home or it needs to go. You probably have a lot of stuff in drawers and shelves that can go away. Just pay attention to where stuff goes every day, where it's coming from, where it's getting put away. A lot of the time we can have a system for putting things away that's actually kind of complicated, so it like never happens. Like one thing I noticed, I keep some of my pans in a cupboard above the stove. You guys are gonna think I'm so lazy, but this is the kind of thing we do. I tend to just leave them on the counter for days at a time because I like never get around to just standing on the stool and putting them up there. But I bet some of you out there are realizing that there are things that you do that are like that. We can do that with a lot of things where we just sort of let mess happen because it's too overwhelming to think about where it goes. We need a junk drawer. We need a place where the odds and ends go. That's so important to have. Junk drawers get a bad rap. Junk drawers are awesome. We need a junk drawer. That's hard to say. That's like a tongue twister. Junk drawer. We need places for interim things. If you find you're often, you have things that you're bringing with you somewhere else, like you have books that you're going to return to a friend or products that you're going to return to the store, you need a place in your house where that always goes. Have a process for managing mail. This is kind of old fashioned now, but I don't know about you guys. I get tons of junk mail. And sorry, you can hear my kids are playing with the dogs, and I can't shout at them to be quiet because they won't hear me because they're on the back porch. But anyway, when you bring in the mail, throw away all the junk mail and have a place where the bills or whatever important things go. Immediately throw away packaging. Don't leave it around the house. Little things like that, like refine your system, a place for everything and everything in its place. That also applies to time management. Have a time of day that you're doing everything. Also, habit stack. This is a concept from Atomic Habits, which is a great book. It's definitely not written by a Christian author, so there's, I don't think it's particularly offensive in any way, but I think it's got like a little bit of language, references to sex that are definitely not like biblical. It's nothing like vulgar or anything. Just fair warning, it is not a Christian book. Atomic Habits, and it is a great book, and I highly recommend it. But he talks about habit stacking. This is something that when I listened to it, I was like, oh, I totally do that. This has really helped me. And that is when I do this, I will also do that. So one thing I do is when I go in the bathroom in the morning and I'm like, you know, freshening up, brushing my face and washing my teeth. My kids always laugh when I say that. I wipe down the bathroom. I wipe down the counter. I wipe down the outside of the bathtub and the faucet and the toilet. That takes me literally 2 minutes. This is a great daily habit, by the way, just for keeping a bathroom clean. Just wipe it down once a day. I normally hit it again before my husband gets home because I like the idea of him, you know, showering off when he gets home from work in a nice clean bathroom. That will keep your bathroom relatively clean. Obviously, you need to get in there and do deep cleaning when it's time. So you can do things like that. You know, if you are a homeschooler like me, another daily habit that I have is when we're all done with the morning time, just pick up all the books, put everything away. You know, we have a book, we have a book basket for our homeschool books. We have a shelf that I use for all of our curriculum materials. And then my boys have book baskets in their room where all their library books and their other books go. And train your kids to put things where they go. Having a place for everything to go is so helpful for them. I was talking about time management and habit stacking. Have a time of day that you're always doing like one particular chore, and you're probably already doing this. So that's where habit stacking is so helpful. Just think about the routine that you already have. It might be bad habits. Everybody has habits. You know, we have habits that are incredibly difficult to break. So obviously we can form new habits that are easy to keep. But capitalize on your own psychology, on your own pre-existing routines and habits, and build on that. You know, maybe you, maybe you go for a run every day, and then while you're cooling down, you're just kind of like walking around. Maybe that's the time that you check your text messages, and then for the rest of the morning, because you know that you totally get like sucked into your phone if you're checking your messages all the time, put your phone on silent. You can set it so your husband can, I have an iPhone and I can set it so my husband, his text messages and calls always go through even when my phone is on silent. So you can do that for like, you know, there are all sorts of apps and settings that you can manipulate on your phone to make your phone less distracting. This is something I'm really working on right now, is spending less time just mindlessly scrolling on Instagram. And so one thing I do is when I post, do my daily post, that's when I go and I check all of my, I go back through all the comments. I try to like hit messages at that point. You can, all sorts of little things like that. I can't tell you what's going to work in your life, but I bet you can think of ways that you can build habits on top of each other. Because tiny little things like wiping down your bathroom in 2 minutes when you're brushing your teeth and washing your face in the morning, will make a huge difference. And the really, really cool thing about little habits like that is they motivate you and they inspire you, and it feels so good. Habits stick when they're rewarding. So having a nice clean bathroom is rewarding, and then you want to keep doing that. I mean, it gets to the point where, I don't know, like, if you know how you like popping bubble wrap, like you see bubble wrap and you're like, ooh, I want to pop that. It's the same where like I see like I'm a dirty sink. Ooh, I want to wipe that down because I know how great it looks and feels when it's clean. So those are just a kind of a jumble of like practical tips for working smarter and not harder. Don't dump all of your stress. Well, do go to your husband. Your husband is your husband. He can probably support you. He may not have the advice that you are expecting or want, but it might be really helpful. Men can be really practical. People who aren't in the thick of your stress and chaos at home are probably going to have much more practical advice because they can look at everything going on objectively. But men are just tend to be, not every single man, but the majority of men tend to be much more practical. We don't always like their advice because we often are going for kind of more of a fantastical, idyllic idea of what we want our homes to look like, what we want our daily routines to look like. They're more interested in simply getting things done. And I hope you are too. If you want to keep your home well enough that your husband can come home to a decently clean home and a relaxed wife, which really should be the goal, I guarantee you, most of you, your husbands are going to be happier if you're chill when they get home than if the house is clean. I think that's just generally true for most men. And if you are feeling like you have a little bit, even a little bit more control over your homemaking, sorry, I have no idea how much of what my kids are doing you can hear, but they're like, I don't know what they're doing out there. They're having a blast. But if you gain any any sense of control in your home, you are probably going to be more relaxed. And when you're more relaxed, when you feel more in control, that's going to kind of snowball. Bad things snowball, but good things snowball too. So anyway, I hope that is practical and helpful. Thank you all so much for being with me here today. I've definitely rambled on long enough. So if you have any questions at all, I would love to hear from you. I'd love to hear what you thought of everything that we were discussing, any ideas, reactions, feedback you had. Again, this is a completely reader-supported publication, A Homemaker's Manifesto. If you're listening to this somewhere other than Substack, please head over to my Substack. I'll put the link in the show notes. Subscribe. I would love if you wanted to sign up and be a premium subscriber and be a part of our book club and get our Purrful Digests and you'll get like twice as many podcasts from me, because I do several podcasts that are just for the premium subscribers. Or if you are a free subscriber and you've been considering upgrading, I would love to have you. So please do so. There's actually a link in my profile on Instagram to get 50% off coupon on the paid subscriptions. I don't think that is offered just the way Substack is set up. You can poke around though. Most of my posts mention that there is a 50% off coupon. So look in any of the recent posts and you will see a button that says, you know, save 50% for 1 year. I would be so grateful, because those subscriptions are what keep this going, makes the free content possible. I'm like PBS, just, you know, not a Marxist, and I don't get taxpayer dollars. So thank you so much. Those of you who have signed up for premium subscriptions, I am so eternally grateful for you and just for making this all possible. I've loved getting to know you. I've been loving our book club. We've had such cool discussions. I mean, it has really been such a blessing, and we're only a couple weeks in. So yeah, anyway, I've got an awesome, exciting podcast next week with a surprise guest coming up. Not so surprised. I told a couple of people already, but hopefully you'll tune in for that, because I think you're going to love it. And we're going to have a new digest coming out either tomorrow or Sunday. So keep an eye out for that for my premium subscribers. Anyway, I already said I'd yammer on too long, and here I keep going. So I'm going to cut it off now. I hope you guys have a blessed and wonderful week, and thank you so much for being here. Take care.